The Dick Cavett Show.
Dick Cavett was a copy boy at Time Inc. when he wrote some jokes for Jack Parr and handed them to the great man as he stepped off an elevator. Parr famously gave him a job on The Tonight Show, and in the late 1960s, Dick Cavett got his own show and became a legend in his own right in late-night talking. Cavett hosted a talk show for most of four decades before he took a new job writing a blog for The New York Times. Perhaps less well-known on his resume, he was a gold medal pommel horse state gymnastics champion in Nebraska and appeared briefly in an episode of The Sopranos in 2007.
Johnny Carson couldn't do the pommel horse, even though he's from Nebraska, right?
He tried, but I like Johnny, so I won't describe the result.
And to your own pleasure, saw yourself in an episode of The Sopranos in 2007?
You don't have any idea what that meant to me. Yes, I one of the blogs in the book is How to Live
Without
after
the
Sopranos, because I didn't really see how
but
life
But you know, you
on.
Wrote the blog before the last episode, so I got to ask you, were you among the millions of people disappointed by the ending?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, which is why you didn't
I wasn't so
it.
Much disappointed
painful.
As confused, and I was suckered by it. I actually thought that, the electricity had gone off at my end of Long Island, and the screen went to just scramble, and I thought, oh, damn, I'm missing the last moments. And many other people thought the same thing, that the set went out.
I can see you there in your sweatpants storming around your living room going, no, no, they've blown it completely.
I did. I cursed the gods. I was so mad. Most of the gods, anyway.
This book is a collection of the blogs that you've written for The New York Times over a period of a year?
No, it's been more. It seems like, in some ways, it seems like 10 years, because as anybody knows who's written on a regular basis, at first you think this is easy, then, I'm running out of stuff, and then I'm finished. And that occurred in about the second month. And it's been, I'm in the third year, let's put it that way.
So you end up with more things to write about.
Yes. Steve Allen once said about comedy writing, the more of it you do, the more you can write. And there's something about that in writing. You do sort of get in shape. I'm so grateful to you for mentioning my favorite credit, which is not three-time Emmy winner and all those, but... state champion gymnast pommel horse.
Why is that your favorite credit?
Because I don't know. I think maybe it's because I worked harder in that than anything I ever had before and ever have since.
Well, pommel horse certainly describes some of the encounters on your show when people really went at it in these spontaneous awkward moments. I loved them.
Hockenberry, are you playing upon the word pummel and pommel
it's public radio, we play word games. Yeah. It's kind of a thing we do.
That's what I come here for. And I had to let my team down the last season because, as the luck would have it, the state gymnastics meet fell on the exact same day as what used to be called the college boards. And I had to go to Omaha and take the college.
And that's followed
you for life.
SATs.
Scarred you for life.
Yeah.
It was. Actually, it's kind of scary to think that I thought about, I just can't abandon my team. In which case... had I maybe gotten another gold medal, I would have been happy, but you would have been looking over here at an empty chair.
Well, it seems to me as you progress through some of these blogs, one of the things that perhaps kept you going, maybe gave you more materials, you seem to have taken actual delight in the responses from the people who read your blogs that you were again playing to an audience, only this time it wasn't live.
Well, that's very perceptive of you. You know how men say that as if for a woman that's very perceptive?
Wow, I'm surprised.
There's always that in a man's tone. Yeah. Why isn't that? Aren't you clever for a girl?
What a cute little thing.
I used to get in trouble.
Right,
and
it is
so
thick
guests
in here.
I remember the first time on a show when people still smoked on talk shows, and a feminist lady, I grabbed for the lighter and held it out, and she pulled the cigarette back and lit it herself.
You remember that. That's the moment out of all.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a little bit about the responses of your readers, because sometimes it's almost as though you're playing to get those negative responses. I mean, maybe I'm reading too
much. That's almost as perceptive. are you going to sit there and take that?
Surprisingly.
Oh, I enjoy
it. You keep saying it's perceptive, but you're not answering the question.
I slid off two of your questions, I think.
He's an artful dodger here.
Yeah.
Say again?
An artful dodger.
Yeah.
Yes. Hey, that's good.
Let's stop talking about Charles Dickens. All right.
Here. Okay. Don't let me up off the floor.
That's right.
You're right. It is a lot like playing to an audience to be able to read the responses, whether they're so many of them are so brilliantly written. So many people out there who can write
surprisingly
and have good ideas. and as your sixth grade teacher used to say, shows good thinking. When you said the equation was the band around the middle of the earth. No, but shows good thinking.
Well, you know, it restores the level of discourse that I associate with your talk show. I mean, in so many ways, the level of discourse, even though sometimes people got angry, was pretty smart. I mean, it was fun and an adventure to hear what you would come up with on your shows.
Well, that was a lot of the fun of it was having the fun of coming up with things. Seeing reaction is great, and as you said, writing and seeing the written response printed with the column and online is a joy, even when it's so goodbye forever, Mr. Cabot.
Well, you know, I got to ask you, one of your blogs was about comedy writers and how they don't, the instinctual ones don't know what joke they're going to crack before they crack it. You talk about several times Groucho Marx being surprised by his own jokes.
Yes, this is an insight that took me many, many years to have. And I had it the last couple of years while watching one of the greatest shows I did with Groucho. And seeing his little laugh at the end of something he said and realizing with a genius like him, there's no space between your line and his response. In other words, he doesn't think what I'll say and then say it. It came like a spark instantly, and there was no thought involved. It's reflex. With a lesser wit, there's a moment where maybe he has to decide what to say. And if his timing is good, it still gets a laugh.
Yeah.
But the fact that I realized that this comic genius, Groucho, is able to enjoy what he says at the instant he says it and be surprised by
it. Here's hearing the joke at the same time that we do.
Exactly.
You know, we've been asking our listeners, imagine that you were Dick Cavett. Who would you want to interview? So I want you to answer. Imagine you were Dick Cavett.
Too hard.
Who have you not interviewed that you would want to talk to?
I've come up with two names I've overused, Frank Sinatra and Cary Grant. Sinatra, both of them, I think I could have tried harder and maybe
to get it.
So when you're doing five shows a week, nobody means that much more to you than hardly anybody else.
Right.
You're
just being, we know the feeling.
You're being knocked down by the surf constantly and so on. I got one of a goon when I tried to call Sinatra. I said, I don't know who you are. Frank isn't doing nothing now. And
well,
that discouraged me a little. And then Cary Grant said, they'll find out how dumb I am. And I said, Mr. Grant, you could only be so dumb, I'm sure.
The book is called Talk Show. Dick Cavett, thanks so much for joining us.
This is it. I've got two more hours.
Oh, man. Dick Cavett, Celeste Headlee, John Hockenberry. It's a talk show called The Takeaway.